Now. Real people. Real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
Every night we kind of like to have somebody interesting and maybe something a little bit different. And it varies. God only knows the amount of different types of people we've had at night. But I want to speak to Grant Ennis. And Grant is a lecturer at Monash University and the author of Dark PR, How Corporate Disinformation Harms Our Health and the Environment. And I remember we had Eddie, one of our callers, on talking about this only recently. Now, he grew up in California in the US and is now based in Paris, but has lived in many places around the world like Singapore, Turkey, Iraq, Honduras, and Mexico. And Grant has over 20 years experience in international affairs, public health, complex emergencies and environmental action. And he also joins us on the air. Grant, good evening to you. How are you?
Good evening, Niall. Good to be here with you.
It's wonderful. It's such an interesting topic, by the way, I have to be honest with you, because we talk about misinformation and disinformation all the time, but we never think about the negative aspects in relation to our health and how big, large corporate companies are purposely promoting stuff that just isn't good for us.
Yeah, absolutely. I think people tend to think about misinformation or disinformation as some kind of like Russian disinformation campaign.
Or in the political sphere. Yeah, the political sphere, I suppose, more so than anything else. Yeah.
But really, corporations are using exactly the same playbook as government, which is something we don't talk about nearly enough. And I think it's really fascinating subject, because the same books from the early 1930s about propaganda were read by the Nazis and they were read by Coca-Cola. So these companies are learning from the same playbook as these governments from around the world.
Mm. When we look, I suppose, and I remember somebody talking to me there recently about baby food. I know this is something as simple as baby food. How we hook children, for example, onto sugar from the day they're born. Now, I know in Europe it's slightly different to America, the ingredients. But we're hooking them onto sugar. You talked about, and the reason I brought that up is because you mentioned Coca-Cola a few minutes ago. So we're purposely hooking children into something that's really bad for them. And yet nobody ever says anything about it. It's actually looked at some such a good thing. Sugar's supposed to be fun, but it's not. And we know that as well. And the same goes, say, for example, in the more modern times, we're talking about fossil fuels and cars. And of course, the big push at the moment is for EV cars, which everybody who's reasonably intelligent knows is not the answer or not the future. So we're constantly kind of pushing things on people that are generally not good for them. But they get away with it and nobody pulls them up.
Absolutely. And I think part of it is what you just said, that we're putting the sugar into the baby food and it's being framed as a good thing, exactly as you just said. It's being promoted as something that's really good for the baby, good for the parents. It's an easy source of food. You don't have to cook it. And by promoting it as something good, we're using a frame that I call post-denialism. So if we were talking about denialism, we'd be saying, oh, sugar's not bad for you. But corporations will go a step further and actually say, sugar is good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like Guinness is good for you. You have all these signs that say Guinness is good for you. It's a bit of an old example, but it's a pretty good one. And you used to have the tobacco industry saying the same thing. Tobacco is good for your health. You used to see. You have a lot of fossil fuel companies that say, actually, global warming will be a good thing because there'll be so much carbon in the atmosphere, plants are going to grow great.
But here's the thing about the whole global warming thing. Now, I don't want to get into a climate change conversation. That's the last thing I want to do, because that'll go down some sort of rabbit hole. But in saying that, we're now pushing, I suppose, away from fossil fuels. And I think we will naturally move as a world. We will naturally move away from fossil fuels anyway, because we've a limited amount of them either way. But we're moving towards this kind of promotion of electric vehicles. And I don't know your thoughts on electric vehicles, but the world and its mother, as far as I can see, it knows they're not the solution. You know, they take too long to charge, they're inconvenient, you know, the batteries cost too much, the servicing costs too much, they have a huge problem, you know, environmentally, you know, when you look at the people who have to dig up the cobalt to make these batteries, but yet we're promoting them as something that's good for society. And yet I don't think they are.
Yeah, I think that electric vehicles have been sold to us as a panacea for global warming and a lot of other things. But what we find is that electric vehicles emit even more non-exhaust pollution than normal cars because they're so heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also framed as it's a misunderstanding of what we want for getting ourselves around and getting the things we need. You had a really good show the other day can't remember the guy's name that was on the show with you, but he had a horrible, horrible story of he built a log cabin.
Oh, yes. And, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
And I think the title of your show was something like, should the government be able to tell you what you're going to do with your own land or something to that effect?
Yeah. The government were saying he had no planning permission for the log cabin and they were going to take it down and put him in jail.
Yeah. And I think that's actually just the tip of the iceberg for really the problem that we have that we should be talking about instead of talking about electric cars. So this is sometimes talked about as the difference between mobility, which is like electric cars, the Hyperloop, high-speed airplanes, versus accessibility. So accessibility in downtown Dublin is great. You can walk around, you can get the kinds of things you want. It's very easy to get anything that you need. And so if you optimize a society or your country for accessibility, you can get anything in whenever you want, really simply. If you optimize for mobility, you get a parking lot. Your whole country just becomes one big parking lot. You have some countries or around the world that I probably shouldn't name names here, but that one city that often gets the reputation for this is Atlanta in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's just constant freeways, constant driving. People are stuck in their car the entire time. Anywhere downtown is lots of parking, but there's nothing to park, nothing to go to. There's nothing to do. And part of that is because of land use requirements like the ones that you covered on your show the other day, where the government is literally telling people what they can't do with their land. So I was reading the news the other day about Ireland and land use policy. And I saw that in Dublin, you have limits on how high buildings can be.
That's right. Yeah, we're not like America. We don't have skyscrapers.
Most of the United States has that same law that you have in Dublin, that you can't build higher buildings. And so that helps to create the housing crisis, because you can't build as many high buildings, so there can't be as many apartments. But that's just kind of the tip of the iceberg. And similar to the other guy that you had on the show with, is really poor guy. I hope he's better now. But really had a tough story.
Yeah, well, so far so good. He's not in jail yet. But I mean, and a lot of people are campaigning for him. A lot of people are protesting. A lot of people are helping him out. And I think it would be a decision that could bring down a government if you put somebody like him in jail, because the whole country is watching that particular story. But either way, there was a piece in the Irish Times there recently, and it was attributed to yourself. And it said the government should end subsidies for fossil fuels, sugar, alcohol, and the car industry. Ireland and other countries need to stop subsidizing harmful industries that are killing their citizens. That's according to Grant Ennis, author of the book Corporate Disinformation. Do you want to explain that a bit further?
Yeah, so you have this Irish Central Statistics Office.
Yeah, the CSO. CSO, yeah.
Yeah, if you go to check out their website, it's according to the Irish CSO and according to the International Monetary Fund, which both report the same numbers, Ireland subsidized fossil fuels 3 billion euros per year. So Ireland is subsidizing global warming. I don't know the numbers for how much Ireland is subsidizing junk food and sugar, but I do have the calculations for Australia, and it's about 5 billion Australian dollars per year, which is probably about 4 billion euros, something to that effect.
But Grant, on the other scale, Ireland makes a lot of money out of fossil fuels too, because the amount of money we charge in excise duty, VAT, carbon tax, and there's a new tax there called energy tax. So for every litre of fuel, for example, you put into your car, it's probably costing about, you know, 1 euro, but we're charging 1.70 for it. So the government are probably getting, you know, more than a 50% split on it.
So, you know, Niall, you might actually have information that I don't know about, because I'm not Irish.
Oh, okay. Let's be clear. Petrol, or gas as you call it in America, petrol and diesel are a lot more expensive in this country than they are in the United States. You guys think you have it bad at $3 a gallon. You know, we're paying, you know, probably about $2.20 a liter.
Wow. Okay. I mean, I don't know anything about the way that you do that, but I know that the way that these kinds of subsidies are usually calculated are in net.
Mm-hmm.
So when you hear a government saying that they've got $3 billion of subsidies, they're talking about net subsidies.
Yeah.
I mean, that's at least how the IMF calculates it.
Okay.
Globally, humans are subsidizing fossil fuels to the tune of $7 trillion per year. That's probably, again,
But we don't. I mean, again, I don't want to get into a whole climate change argument, but we don't really have an option at the moment, Grant, because, okay, you know, we have sustainable fuels now. You have wind farms, you have solar panels, you have all those other things that are, you know, we're kind of learning as we go along. We even use carbon capture as well, although we have, probably don't use it as much as we should. But in saying that, you know, we're not ready yet to move away from fossil fuels. We would like to, but we're not there yet. I mean, 85% of the world's energy still comes from fossil fuels.
So you could have probably said that argument in the year 2000 also, right? Would have been fair enough. Since 2000, Ireland has doubled fossil fuel subsidies along with most of the rest of the world. So, I mean, we could continue to say this and use the argument that you just made until the end of time if we wanted to. But usually what we're seeing is around the world year after year, we're increasing fossil fuel subsidies. So, I mean, if we want to take action on global warming to stop it, we should probably stop funding it.
But then what happens? And I'm really intrigued by this. Then what happens? So we stop subsidizing fossil fuels and refineries. And we've seen that already, by the way, in Europe, and particularly in the West, where we don't have the same amount of refineries because of the investment has dropped in it. And then subsequently, we see the price of fossil fuel increase. So we've seen the price on the forecourt or the heating oil or whatever, or the gas go up. And that effect, in effect, you know, affects the citizens. It doesn't really affect the government as much, but it affects the citizens because they're paying and their lifestyles change because it costs them more to live.
Yeah, and we don't want people suffering. But the question is, for global warming, do we want to stop it?
Well, I think everybody wants the best for the future. I think anybody who says otherwise is daft.
Mm.
You know.
Do we want then to keep increasing our subsidies year after year to finance global warming?
Mm-hmm. On the other things, just let's move away from the global warming and the fossil fuels at the moment. In relation to sugar and alcohol, I don't drink, so people think I'm a little bit biased towards alcohol. We spend a massive amount of money promoting alcohol, which is something that's extremely bad for our health, as far as I'm concerned, unless you're good enough to be a once a week social drinker. But most people in Ireland are not, as you well know. Ireland is fond of a drink. We spend a huge amount of money telling everybody how wonderful alcohol is, and it isn't. It's as bad as smoking, probably. Indirectly, directly kills more people.
Yeah. I don't know if it kills more people than smoking. You might be right.
When I say directly and indirectly, when you take into consideration domestic violence, public order problems, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
It definitely makes sense. I mean, the WHO released a statement last year or the year before that even one drink is carcinogenic. There's mm-hmm. no safe lower limit for alcohol. Just like radioactive material. Mm-hmm. There's no lower limit. I mean, that's probably not true for radioactive material, actually, is it? We do. But then alcohol. Alcohol than radioactive material in that sense.
No, I can't. I don't think I've ever had any radioactive material, although I've had an X-ray in a hospital. That's been as far as it goes, I think, when it comes to radioactive material.
Yeah, no, alcohol is incredibly unhealthy. I mean, you've got 300 deaths per year in Ireland on the roads right now, right?
You know what? We've had a bad year for the size of our population, of course. We've had a bad year this year. And, you know, we've done so much to make it safer to drive. And, you know, the education and everything else that we've done and making cars safer with NCTs and road tests, roadworthiness. And yet this year and last year again, you know, it's going back up again, the amount of deaths on the roads.
Yeah, no, it's tragic. It's tragic.
Mm.
I was talking to one of my colleagues or friends from Alcohol Action Ireland the other day, Shayla Gilhenny. Mm-hmm. Shayla, forgive me if I pronounced your last name wrong. They're doing some really wonderful work right now in Ireland to try and work on this situation. I really wish you all luck.
Mm.
Road deaths going up and alcohol deaths continuing to be terribly high. I think it's really quite a problem, as you rightly...
Well, it is a problem when you consider that we thought we had a handle on it. You know, if you go back to the 1980s when cars weren't great, you know, the safety of cars weren't wonderful. And, you know, we had, I don't know, a lot of deaths, 800-900 deaths per year on the road. We got it down to about 150 at one stage back around 2015, 2016. Now we're heading back up again. We're back up around over 200 probably now, maybe 300 by the end of this year. I don't know. Which is, I know it doesn't sound like a lot, but for Ireland, it's a lot. And that's not including people who are maimed or injured or lose a limb or whatever it is. That's just deaths, fatalities. And only over the weekend, again, we lost a family, a mother and two daughters in a tragic car accident.
Horrible.
So, I mean, yeah, over the last 24 hours. So, I mean, it's just, and nobody has an idea why this is happening. You know.
Well, your vehicle kilometers traveled per year are going up.
Mm-hmm.
They're going way up. And for every vehicle kilometer traveled that you have over your society, you're going to have more road deaths.
Mm-hmm.
And I, from the dates that you quoted, the 80s, where you had even more road deaths, you've increased and increased and increased your vehicle kilometers traveled every year. So you're probably going to continue to see an uptick.
Mm. But this is the problem, Grant. When we look back in the 80s, for example, maybe we had 500,000 cars on the road with a population of 3 million people. Now we have a population of 5.1 million people and probably 1.2 million or 2 million cars on the road. So you would imagine the numbers would be much bigger than they are in the 80s. But what happened was they dropped dramatically. So they went from the 80s for 800 or 900 people dying a year down to about 150, you know, in the kind of mid-2000s. And now we're seeing them going back up again, even though it doesn't make any sense. The figures don't make sense. So we don't actually know what's causing it because the police are doing their job as far as we can see.
What do you think it was? What led to this dramatic increase?
I have my own theories on it. I think our roads have disimproved. I think that's part of the problem. We've got a lot of back roads, Grant, in Ireland, a lot of small by roads and barons, as they call them, down the middle of the country and down in Kerry. And a lot of these accidents usually happen in rural Ireland, you know, and bad roads. So I think a lot of it's to do with that, young people not learning to drive properly in bad roads. We really need to do what they do in Canada, which is have children coming out of college or coming out of, you know, high school with a driver's license. Whereas here we wait till they're 18 before they take their first lesson, you know, so that's really education is the key, I think. But anyway,
has there been driving overall, though?
Sorry, say that again.
Has there been an increase in driving? Are more people driving?
I wouldn't have thought so, because they only announced there recently that, you know, more people are now using public transport, particularly in cities. So I don't think there's an increase in driving. I think there was a huge increase in driving over the last, you know, 3 or 4 decades, but I think certainly that increase has started to come down a bit. Let's get back to the misinformation, disinformation, corporate disinformation. COVID-19 must have been a wonderful time, by the way, for corporate disinformation.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I didn't follow the COVID-19 disinformation tightly, but you did see quite a lot of vaccine disinformation coming out of Russia, coming out of China for different reasons,
mm-hmm.
and just a huge explosion of anti-vax tropes coming out everywhere. It was really quite a time. It really became a difficult time to understand what the facts were, and I think that's quite a problem that we less and less we have shared facts.
I think social media has had a huge impact, generally speaking, on misinformation and disinformation. And by the way, it's hard. I mean, I see a government here in Ireland accusing people of disinformation, and they do it themselves on a regular basis. So it's kind of hard for your average citizen nowadays to know what's the truth and what isn't the truth. And what we do is we set up NGOs, which we do in this country, and their job is to monitor disinformation and misinformation. But now we're trusting, say, 10 people in a room to monitor disinformation, and that's based on what they believe is misinformation, which may be misinformed, if you know what I mean. So it's a very difficult task to monitor the whole thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it becomes we've got to do more than monitor it, right? We actually need to stop it. And I oftentimes explain this problem as, this is not a problem of my idiot uncle or your idiot uncle, Niall. This mm-hmm. is a problem that we really need to go upstream on. So I distinguish between like the viral model of disinformation, which is like my idiot uncle posts something on Facebook that then gets reposted or retweeted or whatever. And then it just kind of goes on and on like a virus. That's not really what's happening here. What's happening here is that you have very large corporations or countries that are actually spending millions and millions of dollars on bot farms. They're spending millions of dollars to pay for the amplification of advertising or to...
or propaganda.
Yeah, propaganda, well, kind of vehicles for dissemination of that propaganda. So they'll pay for fake newspapers, fake blogs that then get reposted by bots, that get reposted by kind of like paid influencers. So it's not a question of idiots. It's a question of money. And we need to really kind of like forgive ourselves and forgive others about this disinformation stuff, because humans are just all animals. Whenever we get exposed to information, we're going to oftentimes fall for lies. I've fallen for disinformation on food before. I used to think chocolate was healthy, that Guinness was good for me, that, you know, red wine is good for you. This kind of stuff is propaganda. It's lies. It's very convincing. And if we hear it enough times, we believe it. And so what corporations do or state actors do is that they pump a lot of money into the dissemination of this disinformation, so we see it all over the place.
But Grant, we're told to trust. We don't know who to trust anymore. This is our problem as citizens. We stop trusting. I mean, in Ireland, we've political chaos at the moment, as you have in America, by the way. We've political chaos in Ireland at the moment, where we've just had a big referendum, or two big referendums on one day. I'm not too sure if you're familiar with it, where we wanted to change the constitution. And the government were convinced it was going to be a landslide yes. They pushed for the yes vote. All the political parties went for the yes vote, even though the citizens were going, well, hold on, we don't understand this. We don't believe this is right. The government weren't listening. It was a landslide no vote. Not just a landslide. It was a record defeat. Now the government are like rats on a sinking ship, you know, jumping around saying, well, we never agreed with it in the first place, or pretending they didn't agree with it. So we've got a huge problem in trust. We don't trust our government. And as Martin points out on a text here, something we were talking about a second ago, we mentioned COVID-19. He said, first of all, he goes on to say that the WHO are an unelected body controlled by a big pharma and big agriculture. Should we trust them? And he says, what about big pharma influence? So what about the influence of the pharmaceutical companies of the world? They do have massive influence, and we get misinformation from them too, Grant.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I tend to kind of, I'm a little shy of criticizing pharma, just because the community that criticizes pharma is oftentimes, not everybody, but there's a large amount of people in that community and that are critical of big pharma and are anti-vax.
No, I know, I get that. I'm like, sometimes when I hear the word big pharma, I kind of and think what I know is going to come next. But genuinely, yeah. I think it's a fair question that when we look at, when we look at organizations like the WHO, who are now trying to sign, you know, the rest of Europe up to this, or Europe up to this pandemic treaty, which means they have control over everything if another pandemic happens. I mean, and then we're asked to trust them. Or we're asked to trust the pharmaceutical industry, who make trillions of dollars every year. And we've all seen some of the documentaries, you know, who are making trillions of dollars every year off the backs of people who are probably not too sick at all.
Yeah, absolutely. We have to really think through what are the conflicts of interest with the pharmaceutical industry. Mm-hmm. I mean, they make money off of the treatment of illness, right?
Mm-hmm.
They make unless we're talking about vaccines and these kinds of things. But
yeah, let's park them for the moment. Park the vaccines. Let's just talk about, you know, pharmaceuticals in general.
Insulin treatments for chronic illness that people have to take for their entire lives. Antiretroviral drugs, these kinds of things that you have to take them forever. So there's an incentive for pharmaceutical industry to not seek preventative solutions. Now, I'm not accusing anybody of this, but we just have to remember that incentive is there. That's a conflict of interest. Like with this kind of conflict of interest, if you have like an auditor auditing you, you don't want like as a company, as like a publicly traded company, you don't want to be caught with these kinds of conflicts of interest with like people on your payroll, directors, people on your board of directors. And so I think we really need to think through what are these conflicts of interest of large industry from the same perspective. Mm-hmm. And we do know that pharma has this this conflict of interest. And so when pharma funds, let's say, large NGOs, that those NGOs are engaging with a funder that would be more interested in them not seeking preventative solutions.
Yeah, of course.
And that is problematic. That's incredibly problematic. And we have a good, we have to be concerned.
It's called almost like planned obsolescence, isn't it? Of human beings, in a sense, isn't it? Planned obsolescence, if you go back in time. Just in relation to just finally, what would be your biggest concern? If I asked you to write a piece tomorrow, you know, based on your knowledge and what you, how you feel about, you know, kind of propaganda, disinformation, et cetera, particularly in the corporate sector, what would be your biggest concern going forward?
I think that we don't have any kind of restrictions on marketing and advertising and public relations, and that we're subsidizing marketing and public relations at the moment. I think it's very concerning that we don't really tax marketing, we don't tax advertising, we don't tax propaganda. So if a company wants to do some kind of campaign, do an advertising campaign like Coca-Cola and say Coca-Cola will cure cancer, drink more of it, Coca-Cola wouldn't pay taxes on that campaign.
No, they actually save tax. They write it off.
Yeah, they write it off. It's a business expense. Mm-hmm. We need to stop allowing advertising to be tax deductible. It's very blatantly.
I think that's a bit of a blunt instrument, isn't it? But because I understand the point you're making, and I couldn't agree with you more. But then you have to talk about smaller businesses who struggle to do business and have to do a little bit of advertising every now and again to drum up a little bit of business, you know, and so they're using, you know, their own capital for doing that. So in those cases, I would see a need for, you know, giving tax deductibles for that kind of advertising.
Yeah, I mean, if I ran a small restaurant and I wanted to, like, paint a sign in front of the building, understandably that paint could be tax deductible, right?
Yeah.
It's a small business. That makes sense. There's definitely got to be some kind of details to be worked out if you're going to do that kind of policy change. But the fact that you have these multi-trillion-dollar companies, multi-trillion-euro companies that are able to write off their enormous propaganda expenses, that's ridiculous.
Pay little or no tax. And as you know, most of those companies run through Ireland.
Yeah. I mean, you've got a bill right now. I believe in Parliament, I'm forgetting the name of the bill, but it's like it ban fossil fuel advertising in Ireland. Mm-hmm. I mean, that, I think industries that are clearly killing us, guns, nuclear weapons, fossil fuels, they shouldn't be advertised with as if they were a good thing by any means. So I think we should be banning it clearly. But if you don't want to ban it, at least stop subsidizing it. Stop incentivizing it, at the very least. I mean, I would be fully in support of a ban. But if you have people that are less insistent than me, we think we could all agree we should stop incentivizing these industries that are clearly harming us from getting a tax write-off for their propaganda. It makes
okay. Well, listen, sorry, your phone line is a little bit dicky at the moment. Well, Grant, it's been really nice talking to you. We could have a very long conversation, I think, about many things, including climate change, global warming, and lots of other things as well. Maybe we'll do that again another night when we have a bit more time. Grant Ennis, listen, thank you very much indeed. I appreciate you coming on the air.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.